So, you know, it was first the SWIG DVI and then subsequently in 2014, OSAC that kind of recognized this challenge. And I'm really happy to report that to date, between the original SWIG DVI documents and subsequently the OSAC DVI task group, they've drafted 14 documents to support medic legal operations following a mass fatality incident. Seven of them have been published by ANSI and the American Academy of Forensic Sciences Standard Board, or ASB, which is the standard development organization that OSAC uses for DVI work. And there's an additional two proposed standards on the OSAC registry, with a third, which is the standard for mass fatality incident management, which was recently approved by the Forensic Science Standard Board to be posted on the registry actually this month. One of the great things about the way that these documents have been developed is that there's kind of an overarching standard, which is the standard for mass fatality incident management, which gives kind of the objectives for a successful operation as well as the considerations for policy decisions that have to be made at the beginning of an operation. And so that kind of sets the standard and is the umbrella document for the rest of the documents that are coming out from the DVI task group, which are a compilation of best practices and standards. And quite honestly, the reason why most of the documents have been drafted as best practices is, like Kat says, one, you don't know what the type of incident is going to be, and folks don't have a lot of funding in this area. And so we needed to write documents and best practices and standards that are achievable, but are appropriate to the incident.
When thinking about disaster victim identification, I think the scenarios that come to mind most prominently are terrorist attacks or plane crashes or natural disasters like wildfires or hurricanes. But with the wake of mass shootings in the United States, could the mass fatality incident management or DVI guidelines apply in these scenarios?
That's a really valid question, and I think it was raised a few times in past school shootings with similarly aged decedents who, you know, all basically look alike, are the same height, may have the same type of dentition because they're the same age, and the level of injury that they had due to the types of firearms used in the incident. And so traditional methods of identification are not possible in those incidents. The individuals are not going to be visibly identifiable or viewable by their parents and their loved ones. So the scientific methods of ID would be required. It is true that the mass fatality occurs at the local level. No matter where it occurs, the local jurisdiction is going to have to handle the processing and identification of those decedents. So a mass fatality for some agencies is going to be a different number of decedents for different agencies. So for example, in the state of Delaware, we could really only handle 5 decedents at one time. And anything more than that for us, for a small office, was technically a mass fatality. And so depending on the jurisdiction handling those school shootings, yes, absolutely, it fits the qualification of needing additional support from disaster victim identification or the emergency management folks.
Yeah, to expand on that, I will say that one of the recommendations from the DVI task group in the standard for mass fatality incident management is the establishment of an operational definition for what a mass fatality incident is in your jurisdiction. Because I think generally speaking, it's kind of recognized to be any incident that overwhelms your local jurisdiction. But, you know, sometimes having a definition that's that general can be stymieing, because it's hard to kind of say, yes, I'm overwhelmed. And it's not really very operational. There is no trigger there. And then sometimes it's difficult to put a number on a disaster, because one of the surest things that you know in the first hours of an incident is that you're going to be getting bad information or misinformation, or at the very least, that the information is certainly going to change because the operation is dynamic and you are getting different pieces of information as the operation unfolds. And so in some jurisdictions, like New York City, for example, we have an operational definition where that includes a possibility of zero decedents. It's the potential for up to 10 decedents. That way, if there are other parts of the definition that are triggered, we go out the door, because it's much easier to respond to an incident and then pull back than if you wait to respond until you've hit a trigger of a particular number and then roll out and engage with the incident command on scene. And then with regard to the identification, I think certainly with mass shootings, like I said before, life safety obviously is a priority. But as soon as the scene is declared safe, and I would say that with any type of incident, that as long as the operational policy decisions are considered, then the medical examiner or coroner or JP or whoever's running the incident will have the opportunity to consider what the incident is and define the policy recommendations to support the mass fatality operation that has to be developed. One of the recommendations is that there be an incident characterization that is performed early and regularly following an operation, which speaks to the type of incident. Is it natural? Is it terrorist? Is it an operation that is going to require complex and protracted recovery, or is the recovery going to be quick? You know, these things all will feed into the type of operation that will unfold back at the medical examiner or coroner or JP's office.